time with a company called Handytech North America, formerly called Triumph Technology, and we're actually registered with the state of Minnesota as Triumph Technology LLC DBA Handytech North America. We are very fortunate to be in the position that we are as a company. We're a small company. Up to recently, we had a half dozen people working for us, three full-timers and three part-timers, and we had an intern who actually developed an online contact management system. Wherever I am in the country, I can actually just jump online now and get contact information and update people back at the office about what's going on. He's a 19-year-old kid, and this is the kind of stuff that just impresses me all the time about the talent that exists within the blindness community. Kid hadn't even graduated from high school yet, and he's already just a phenomenal programmer. Handytech North America came into play here just recently. I think I announced it at the beginning of 07 that we were changing our name for Triumph Technology. First of all, for some of you who may not know about some of my background, first of all, my background actually is in education is as a physical therapist. I've got clinical experience that I had managed to somehow carry with me into the adaptive technology industry in terms of documentation and applying a medical model to our customer base, whether it be for training or for all the way into the sales field. I started working in the mid-90s for a little company called Henter Joyce. Invited on board one cold October afternoon by Ted Henter. He goes, you know, it's going to be pretty cold here in a couple months. And I said, yeah, I'm happy where I am. Thank you very much. And I got a call the following Monday from a gentleman by the name of Jerry Bowman, then the general manager who invited me to go. We know you said you weren't interested. Why don't you just come and take a look? And the rest is history. I moved to St. Petersburg the following January. And I stayed there for about 4 years in the training department. Actually, 3 years in the training department and the last year as a regional manager covering both the Pacific Northwest and the central U.S. with about 17 states in my territory. In 2002, I was offered a position from the Minnesota STAR program, which is the adaptive or the assistive technology project for the state of Minnesota. I did that knowing and understanding that the program nationwide was going to be sunset, discontinued. So I knew that in a year or so I was going to be without a job, but they kept coming up with one continuing resolution after another in Congress, and finally it got re-upped for another 5 years, and I said, okay, cool, I'm out of here. Triumph Technology hit the ground running in June of 2005, and I mean running for survival. And we quickly built a reputation as the United States leading provider of mobile devices for people who are blind. Our slogan is, it's all about adapting. We really believe all technology should be accessible. All technology should be, if it's not already accessible out of the box, it should at least be capable of being adapted to be accessible. We were very impressed with what was going on over at Code Factory with the Mobile Speak Pocket product. At the time, it was Windows Mobile 2003. I downloaded the beta. I played with it for about 3 days, and I think it took 10 years off of my life. It's going to ready to throw the thing up against the wall. And I tell you, I think everybody has had this experience with Mobile Speak Pocket. But then after a while, you reapproach and you do something else. And you say, well, this isn't that bad. Okay, I can do this. And then after a while, you're doing things, and it's just like, did I just do that, really? I mean, did I just take this little bitty device out of my shirt pocket and take down contact information or input a calendar appointment? And it's like, now that's really good. And then, now voice command. Now, did I really just say play everything, and it played everything in my music library? These are some very, very, very cool aspects of the Windows Mobile, both the smartphone and the Pocket PC environment that sighted people have been taking advantage of for years. And now, just about 3 years into it, I think Code Factory has really set the market on fire and really have given the competition a run for the money with what I believe is to be now the best Braille support for a mobile device anywhere. And we're going to get to that. We're going to talk about the difference, because I know I get asked everywhere I go, what's the difference between a Symbian phone and a Windows smartphone and a Pocket PC phone or a Pocket PC device? Is it true that Symbian is dying?
No.
Is it true that Windows Mobile smartphone is better than Symbian?
It's different.
Exactly. Somebody over here just said, just different. Getting back to the Handytech side of things, back in June of 2006, we became non-exclusive distributors for Handytech based out of Germany. Just before the turn of the year, 2007 here, I was extended the opportunity by the corporate headquarters in Germany to actually become the master distributor for Handytech in the United States and Canada. And that's why we actually changed our name, because people have known Handytech products for about 13, 14 years. years, everybody can remember HandyTech.us. Nobody remembers Triumphonic.com, I'm telling you. So we accepted the offer to really use their name, and that's really all it is. They don't have any financial interest in us. They don't own any part of us. They don't tell me how to run the business. They just let me do what we're doing. We represent the entire product line instead of what Siggy, the president of HandyTech, refers to as the flavor of the month. Before, they just got the feeling that if there was they put out a cool product, everything else was kind of shoved aside, and then the focus remained on the one product. Really kind of missing the idea that each product has its own strength and its own uses. It's appropriate to use one device might not be an appropriate environment for another device, and we can talk about that. The first Braille device that I'd like to show you, though, is not a portable device, and rather it's a desktop unit. This one is a 64-cell Braille display. It also comes in an 88-cell version called Modular Evolution. The Germans know how to name a product or what? Modular Evolution, it's the only Braille display in the world that does what it does. It's called active tactile control. And that is that it actually senses the location of your fingertips on the Braille display. And not just one finger or two fingers, but if you want to put all eight fingers on the Braille display, there's actually a strip that runs across the top of the screen where your fingers are actually represented by different colors based on the amount of pressure that you're applying. And it's been borne out in studies, always the highest area of pressure is the reading finger. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Got Modular Evolution sitting on the table back here.
PC cursor.
And I hear PC cursor. Okay. And I brought up a document here, and actually I was over at the Perkins School yesterday. I can't remember how I left the Modular Evolution, because you can customize the settings to fit your particular situation. Now, let me just give a couple of scenarios. Modular Evolution is fantastic for Braille instruction because it knows where your fingers are within a document. They've also come up with a way to analyze information with regards to specific reading behaviors. There are four reading behaviors that it analyzes. It analyzes when you're reading fast, reading normal, and all of these are actually definable by the user. When you stop reading and reading backwards. With that information, you can actually generate a log file that shows you things like, okay, Billy is now reading 18 words a minute. We see that he has a tendency to scrub and read backwards under these conditions. Look at here, he's lingered on this word for about 14 seconds, and then he went and read it again and again and again. And you can see all that in these logs that you generate. Now, for a professional, you don't need that stuff. But what might be really, really nice is reading a book from cover to cover without ever having to press a button. Because when you come to the end of the line, it's going to automatically advance. And if you're somebody who has a lot of paperwork in your life and you generate a lot of documentation, I want to hear who here has not had the experience of turning on bold or underline or applying a heading style and then forgetting to turn it off.
Oh, yeah.
This kind of prevents that from happening, because as you're reading, you're reading your own work, and all of this it says heading level, Courier, Times New Roman, or 12-point, whatever the case may be. You're reading in grade 2 Braille, and as soon as that format information changes, it's going to notify you that there's been a change. That's pretty cool. Get into my documents.
PC by Edgar Allan Poe.
Okay, I've got the Raven.
The Raven. Once Upon a...
by Edgar Allan Poe up here. And I do have Once Upon a Midnight Dreary While I Wandered Weak and Weary. And at the end of Weary... Oh, actually, I've got Active Tactile Control turned off, so I'm going to turn that on here with a keystroke.
ATC on.
Okay, so now I'll read it. It was just a regular display there. It didn't do anything. So I'm going to read it now.
Over. Many. A. Quaint. And
all I'm doing is bringing my fingers across the Braille display.
Wow. Forgotten. Lord dash dash.
The beep signifies that I've just moved to the next line, and I can just resume reading.
While. Not as nearly. Napping. Suddenly. There. Came. A. Tapping.
And moves on to the next line. Okay.
At.
So you can read. You can get rid of the beeps too. You can say, I don't want to hear a beep every time I go to the next line. So it just simply moves to the next line. But let me just give a brief overview of this device. It has a QWERTY keyboard included with the Modular Evolution. It's just a USB keyboard, actually. I can take it off and hold it in my hand. I just disconnected it, and I can replace the QWERTY keyboard with a Braille keyboard. A Braille keyboard that has all the same function keys across the top, the numeric keyboard off to the right, the keypad off to the right, your six-pack, your arrows, but it, just the only difference is it's got a Braille keyboard. For somebody who maybe has motor coordination difficulties and can't, has difficulty using a QWERTY keyboard, something like that could be a godsend, as well as, of course, being able to use it for a full input and output Braille instruction tool. I'm going to go ahead and put the keyboard back on. This unit also has three USB ports, so it can be used as a USB hub. But, of course, you can plug any USB device into it as well. This device also has a 4 gig storage capacity. This is valuable for, let's say, like for the itinerant teacher, the vision teacher who travels from site to site and they want to keep all their materials in one spot. It is actually built in. It's actually it shows up as a removable storage device in my computer. It's 4 gig, and I've got the entire classic literature collection of the Gutenberg Project on it currently, and we're just reading a little something by Edgar Allan Poe at the moment. So let me go ahead and get into the Braille configuration.
Configuration dialog is starting. Settings for Avnitek Braille displays dialog. Connection page. Activate driver checkbox checked.
Again, that's just a single keystroke. It's actually dot 8 in combination with the letter A. And I'm going to, on the Braille keyboard that's on the front here, I'm going to, on the QWERTY keyboard, do a control tab because this is a multi-page dialog.
New ATC checkbox checked.
And I'm going to go and
assistant mode colon settings dot 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 button tab ATC dash monitor colon show monitor after start dash up checkbox checked.
As I mentioned before, on a strip across the top of the screen, a sighted person can actually see where you are. Give me an example of when else, besides a Braille instruction situation, that could be useful.
If you're doing something in your office and somebody wants to actually see what you're reading so that they can describe something to you that's on the page?
Exactly. It's wonderful for students or professionals who are collaborating on projects, on documents. You can be looking at the same thing at the same time. It actually is very helpful because I've done this several times when I've drafted press releases and things like that, and people come and look over my shoulder and say that, you know, do that again.
Would this work with music Braille?
You know, that is an excellent question. One of my dealers is Bill McCann from Dancing Dots. He's actually one of our best dealers right now. He's just on fire with this Braille stuff. And he saw Modular Evolution, and his programmer / brother-in-law, Albert Milani, saw it too, and he said, "I don't get it. How is it working?" So it's something for them to get their head around, but we sat at CSUN with Stevie Wonder, and he's been wanting this for a long time to come to fruition. So the engineers at Handytech, Bill McCann, and we are trying to figure out how to make it work with something like Lime Aloud, the product that comes with the Good Feel software manufactured by Dancing Dots. So imagine a scenario where you're simply reading the music and having it play as you're reading across, and play the notes as you're playing across. It's definitely on the roadmap. That's totally a very good application for this product. I'm going to quickly go through the various options for each of the learning behaviors. And again, these learning behaviors are all customizable. The first one is reading fast. What do I want to happen when I'm reading fast? Well, reading fast is I could simply zip my hand across the Braille display and decide that I want it to read from position of the cursor to the end of the document. I'm reading kind of slow, or what I've defined as normal, and I've gotten tired now and I listen to speech, so now I can just do a gesture and have it read the rest of the document out loud to me.
Oh, wow.
If I wanted to. So let's take a look at some of these.
Show monitor after start dash up checkbox checked. Shift tab, assistant mode colon to enter, ATC dash assistant function.
So when reading fast,
speak word 3 of 11.
I've got to set the speak word. I'm going to press the home key just to jump to the top.
Home. No action.
No action. Okay. That's the first option.
Speak letter.
Letter.
Speak word.
And here are the rest of them. Word.
Speak Braille display.
I can have it speak the Braille display.
Low signal.
I can have it sound a low signal. I'll do that with students when they have a tendency to read backwards, and I want to try to break them of that habit. It alerts me that they're reading backwards, and I can say, okay, come on, stop that.
High signal.
High signal. It's the tone that you hear when you come to the end of a line.
Speak Braille display and move to the next line.
Speak the Braille display and move to the next line.
Say all the root Braille line.
Say all root Braille line.
Say current characters attributes.
say the current character's attributes, so where I am right now.
Say character.
I'm sorry, what was this?
Say character attribute changes.
Oh, say character attribute changes. This is what I really like to use a lot in this setting here. And I'll get back to it.
Root mouse cursor to reading position.
Root the mouse cursor to the reading position. And that's the last one. So I'm going to go...
Say character attribute changes.
Say character attribute changes. And you've got the same
options. Default assist.
For each reading behavior. So now I'm on when reading normal. I want it to do the same thing when I'm reading normal.
And root mouse cursor, say character attribute changes.
Read the character attribute change when I'm stopped.
And default assistant functions, colon, when resting, colon, combo box, speed letter, 2 of 11.
When I'm resting, I want it to do nothing.
Home, no action.
No action. When I'm going
to add default assistant functions, colon, when reading backward, colon, combo box, no action, 1 of 11. Default assistant functions, colon, when reading backward, colon, combo box, no action, 1 of 11.
So I'm going to go ahead and accept these changes.
Shift, tab, cancel button, shift, tab, OK button, enter, sense, shift, tab, ATC, tab. Shift, tab, apply button, enter, shift, tab, OK, enter, works of Edgar Allan Poe.txt.
Now, as I'm reading here,
Courier News 12 points.
It's just going to notify me of the format attribute changes when they occur. So I hear I'm at Courier New 12 point. I didn't turn off the beep. I could have done that. But you hear that it's automatically advancing to the next line still. So let's go ahead and let's see if I...
Top of file, The Raven.
The Raven. Let's say that I want that to be...
Selected, The Raven.
I want to apply Hidden Style 1 to that.
Alt Control 1, okay. The Raven.
And let's say...
Top of file, The Raven, enter.
So I'm going to start reading here.
Land. The Raven, bold aerial 19 points, Intel register, process slash wireless, colon, connected to colon, linksys, zip.
Okay, that's nice. but you get the point. The Raven now is a 19 point, it's bold, it's aerial, and every time the format attribute changes within the document, it's going to report that to me.
So all that triggered that was you just running your fingers across that line that said The Raven?
Correct.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool stuff.
That is cool.
Okay, I hear somebody's icon turning off. What is that? There's another device I love. I think that's a cool device. Yeah, you can't have it all, can you?
You can try.
You can try, that's right. Okay, so let's get to the portable devices real quick here.
What's the cost of that?
Guesses. I want to hear guesses before I actually review.
How many cells? 88?
This one here is a 64 cell.
Okay, 64.
I'll guess 2,500.
Nah.
I'll guess 9,500.
8,500.
I'll say 6,500.
You guys are good. This is a $10,990.
Thank you. I'll be closer.
So the 88 cell one's got to be around 12.
It's almost 14. And the thing that drives the cost up, of course, is the active tactile control that nobody else has.
Yeah.
The president of Handytech, Siggy Kipke, he owns Handytech in Germany. Full out. He has no board of directors to report to. He has nothing to justify. And nobody to justify anything to. He decided, darn it, he was going to do this about 4 years ago. And he didn't. He sunk a heck of a lot of resources into it. And he came up with what I really believe is a revolution in Braille technology. And we'll see it come down in cost over the years. And we'll see it being added into some of the more portable devices as well and become more affordable. But for now, it is what it is in its earliest stages. And we don't expect that the cost will go down anytime soon. Now, I can tell you that there is institutional pricing for a one-time purchase by an organization that serves people who are blind or educational institutions of 20% discount. Unfortunately, there's not any such thing for consumers. All the Handytech Braille displays come with a 2-year warranty, manufacturer warranty. They're serviced right here in the United States in New Brighton, Minnesota. We're headquartered. And we've just recently announced the availability of a product service agreement to extend that an additional year. So we offer 10% off the cost of a product service agreement at the time of purchase of the Braille display, and that would cover you for 3 years.
You know, one of the problems with all Braille displays is that as they get used, they get dirty, dots get stuck. Does anything happen to the ATC stuff as the display gets used more?
It doesn't
faults or it doesn't.
No, pardon me?
Is it just a metal strip or?
The ATC?
The ATC, yeah.
There's actually a sensor in each Braille cell.
I see.
Just suffice it to say that if it's under warranty, it's going to be covered. It's such a new product right now, I can't tell you what it would do in a year.
Yeah, nobody knows yet.
One of the unique characteristics of the Handytech Braille displays is the curved concave Braille cells. Has anybody seen those? The idea behind the curved cells is that as soon as you put your finger on the Braille displayer, or on the Braille cell, is that of course it contours to your finger, and that means that you're immediately in contact with all the dots within the Braille cell. You know, we've all been reading flat Braille forever, right? I mean, it's not going to, if this is not make or break stuff, but it's been proven that it does improve the length of time that most of us can read, because it eliminates a lot of the scrubbing that goes on during the reading of flat Braille cells. Let's get to the portable devices. The nice thing about the phone that I have in my hand, which is a Symbian 9 cell phone called the E61. It has a full QWERTY keyboard, and I'll pass this around before we're done as well. It's a Symbian 9 phone. It's a Nokia E61. It says press unlock the. It's actually unlocking the keypad. I'm going to crank up the volume here. The E61, it's a Symbian 9 phone. They're really two generations of phones that Mobile Speak for the Symbian works on, and those are Series 2 phones that run on Symbian, the operating systems 6, 7, and 8. Currently, we're offering Mobile Speak for those phones, those older phones like the 6682, the 6600, those types of phones for $150. So now you can find a phone like that, like a 6682 for $160, or maybe even $100 or $50 used on eBay, and for another $150 have a really, really nice phone for about $200. We currently sell them the 6682 brand new with a screen reader for $450. So you're basically paying $300 for the phone and $150 for Mobile Speak. Now the Symbian 9 software costs $295. It's the newer product. I've got a stock of the older software, so I just thought, what the heck, we may as well just, you know, as we're phasing in the Symbian 9 stuff, we may as well go ahead and offer some special pricing on the Symbian 8 stuff. And does that mean one Symbian 8 is better than, or Symbian 9 is better than Symbian 8? Not at all. In fact, Symbian, they've had so much time, they've had such a long time to get it right on the Symbian 8 operating system, I would actually venture to say that it's actually a little bit better. Some of the older phones are a little bit better because of it, because Symbian 9 has just recently come into play. So I'm running Mobile Speak on this phone. And I can do everything on this phone either right on the integrated keyboard or from the Braille display. Now, if I wanted to have it set up so as soon as I turned on the phone, the Braille display would connect, I could do that. I don't currently have that turned on, so I'm going to actually press a keystroke to actually connect wirelessly via Bluetooth with my Braille-ino. So I press the keystroke, and this is enabling Braille, and now I see Braille ready on my Braille display. And So I've got my entire calendar is on here, my contacts, all the same stuff that most people use PDAs for, or your Packmates or your Braille notes for. I do with this little device that fits very comfortably. I've got a little leather holster on the side, but it also fits very nicely in my shirt pocket as well. All I had to do is install some software to get that functionality. PC Suite is a real pain to use, but once you get it set up, and you can forget about it, it's wonderful. I've got my computer at home set up, so as soon as I walk into the house, within 30 feet, within range of Bluetooth, it, boom, connects up, and all my notes, all my contacts, all my calendar appointments that I've made on my phone throughout the day, or notes that I've jotted down on my computer, all get synchronized to the computer, between the phone and the computer. And all I have to do is walk in the house and set my phone on the table for that to happen. So I hear messaging 1 of 7. The Braille Eno is what I'm connected to right now.
How many cells is that?
20 cells. Guess how much it costs. Come on.
$3,900
is the cost.
You win one.
Now, $3,900 for this 20-cell Braille display that I can use either with my computer, with my PDA, whether it's or my phone, whether it's a Symbian phone, a Windows Mobile smartphone, a Pocket PC phone. My desktop, my laptop, I can connect with all those things. Rumor has it that there'll even be support for the Icon with the HandyTech Braille displays, which I'm really, really hoping comes to fruition sometime soon. Not only does Braille connect with all these different devices, but in and of itself, it's got its own basic note-taking capabilities as well.
And that connects via Bluetooth?
Yeah, it's connected via Bluetooth right now. If I didn't want to connect to anything, it has a calculator, a scheduler, a clock, basic note-taking features, You can set it up so as soon as you come into range of your computer, again, it connects to your computer, and then you can fly the files back and forth between your PC and the Brailleno. We now have a back translator, so you finally, they realize how important Grade 2 Braille is in the United States, and they have built a back translator into their HTCOM, their Handy Tech Communication software, so you can type in Grade 2 Braille, transfer the file over and have it in just plain text. Another benefit to any of the Handy Tech portable displays is not just the contour cells, but the ergonomics of it. The fact that it comes with a case, you wouldn't believe. There are some Braille displays out there. Anybody familiar with the Braille Star Braille display? Basically, Braille Star exists in the 40-cell and 80-cell versions, and the Brailleno is really nothing more than a 20-cell Braille Star. It's a much smaller form factor. It comes with a case, and also, to me, key for any of these portable Braille devices, they come with user-replaceable batteries, and not some weird battery that you know. The Brailleno, for example, has AA batteries, four AAs. So if you're in a pinch, you don't have a power outlet, you need your Braille display for whatever reason, it's totally fine to just whip out the four-pack of alkaline batteries that you picked up at the gas station, pop them in there, and you'll be up and running again until they wear out. Just don't plug them into the wall. That'd be messy. So that's Brailleno. The Braille display that I'm going to start going the other direction is called Easy Braille. And I would say that Easy Braille is probably its most direct competitor is probably the HumanWare product, the Braille Connect 40. Again, another very nice product, very nicely done product, 40 Braille cells. I think the competitive advantage that this display has over that, and by the way, they're identical, Easy Braille, this price is about $5 less than the Braille Connect 40. These have what are known as long stroke keys on it, which means they feel more like computer keys than buttons. This device ships with a case. We figure if you're going to spend $5,000 on a Braille display, you may as well have something to protect your investment, right? And these take four AAA batteries. Let's get to the phones and the portable devices. The question is the difference between a smartphone and a Symbian phone and a pocket PC phone. Those seem to be the main classifications, or the dumb phone. Has anybody seen an accessible iPhone?
No.
That's a dumb phone. The 6682, which is a second-generation phone, it's based on the Symbian 8 platform, is a smartphone. So those older phones, like the 6600, the 6682, you know, they are smartphones, but they're Symbian smartphones. Not to be confused with Windows Mobile smartphones. When people purchase MobileSpeak smartphone from us, and they ask the difference between MobileSpeak smartphone and MobileSpeak, which one's better, there is no good answer. What I love about MobileSpeak for Symbian, or Symbian operating system, when you receive a text message and maybe there's an attachment, you can do all kinds of things. I, the other day, wanted to send a coworker my calendar appointment. I was able to do that via text messaging. I don't believe you could do that on the Windows Mobile platform, unless you're actually just transmitting it over Bluetooth or something like that. But I was able to actually send it as a text message. The Symbian operating system is a very efficient operating system. It has some very, very useful features. It uses memory and resources very well. As a result, you get lots and lots of battery life with a Symbian phone. Jim Denham, you have a 6682. How often do you have to charge that?
I would say once every 5 days.
Every five days, did you just say?
Yeah.
If I don't use Bluetooth, I can go 4 or 5 days on my E61. No problem. If I use Bluetooth, that's probably going to consume a battery about 40% faster. So now maybe I have to charge every 2.5-3 days. That's not bad. On the Windows Mobile smartphone, you will find yourself, if you don't charge every day, you probably should consider getting a backup battery because you're going to need it. So usually, even whatever device I happen to be using, I just throw it on the charger every day just as a matter of good practice. Even if I have 7 bars, which is max on the Symbian phones, I charge it. Really, the difference between Symbian smartphone and Windows Mobile smartphone is that some things you can do better on one than on the other. For example, the competitive advantage that Windows smartphone has is Microsoft Active Sync. Like I said, I can synchronize my Symbian phone just by walking into the house. That took some doing, though. Microsoft Active Sync tends to be a more screen reader-friendly interface, to say the least. And it's just much easier to use. It's much easier to set up. So that's an advantage. And you can synchronize more than just notes, calendar appointments, contacts. You can also synchronize your music. You can synchronize Audible books, like subscriptions. There's all kinds of things you can do. I think probably the most powerful thing that you can do on the Windows Mobile platform that you can't do so much on the Symbian platform is the use of, you've got lots and lots of choices for third-party applications. You've got some choices for third-party applications on the Symbian platform, but not nearly as many. Like for Audible Player, for example, I use my HP iPad, or I did for a long time, use my HP iPad as my Audible Player. I read a lot, and that was just so easy to just take it out and put on the headphones and start a book and just read away. I haven't struggled through the process of doing that on the Symbian phone yet. Has anybody else done that with Symbian? You tried with no success?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't talk about Pocket PC. Now let's talk about the difference between Windows Mobile Pocket PC and a smartphone, specifically Windows Mobile smartphone. Anybody here? Can anybody tell me what they think the difference is?
Touchscreen.
I hear touch screen.
Pocket PC includes your Word, Excel, Office application.
Mm-hmm. While the lines are becoming more and more blurred between what's considered a Windows Mobile smartphone and a Pocket PC phone, there are some characteristics that do distinguish one from the other. The first one that was mentioned is a touch screen. The Pocket PC phones have a touch screen. For example, if I want to know the time on my 6915, all I have to do is open the protective cover, the screen cover, and do a single tap in the upper left quadrant of the screen, and it tells me the date and the time. If I want to know the status of what I've got Bluetooth turned on, what my signal strength is, what my battery levels are, I tap the upper right corner of the screen. What Code Factory has done is very, very clever. They've taken that touch screen and divided it into quadrants, and each of those 4 areas of the screen have either a single tap, a double tap, or a long tap that can be used to issue commands. So you can see that this can be very complicated. Some people actually say that it's kind of a geek's program. By the way, I don't consider myself much of a geek at all, really. I'm the kind of guy who just likes things to work. But there's a bit of a learning curve to a Pocket PC device. And up to recently, it was a heck of a lot more expensive than Windows smartphone software. Mobile Speaks Pocket was a lot more expensive than Windows Mobile smartphone. Just in the last few weeks, MobileSpeak Pocket has just gone down from $595 to $395, like overnight. Both the Symbian and the smartphone, Windows Mobile smartphone software, are $295. That is the Symbian 9 software. And of course, I'd mentioned earlier that phones that have Symbian 6, 7, and 8, you can get for $150 now. I've got another phone here called the 6915, which I'm going to actually do a couple things on before I pass around. This is the Pocket PC phone. And when I asked the question, what are the difference between smartphone and Pocket PC phone, the second answer I got was that you can use Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. Now, with the new 2006 smartphones, you can use those. You can actually view files in those applications, but you can't create them. Why do you think that is? I don't get it, personally. Microsoft. They want to draw the distinction between the power you get within the Pocket PC environment and the power you get within Windows smartphones. I can tell you, again, that the lines are continually being blurred. So on a Pocket PC phone, you can create a PowerPoint presentation. You can create an Excel spreadsheet and a Word document. And on both of these platforms, the nice thing about, I think that they've really done, Microsoft has come up with a very basic program that in the Windows Mobile 5 environment, you can actually, with Pocket PC, whether you're talking Pocket PC or smartphone, you can actually tell the device what to do using voice command. You can actually use voice command. And if you don't know how to use voice command, it's very simple. You just say, what can I say? Choose help topic. Okay. Contacts.
Contacts.
Okay. Show Kelly Dunn. Okay, and all I had to do is say show Kelly Dunn, and it brought me right into her contact information. I've got her email address, I've got her mobile phone. All I have to do is down arrow to one of those things, and I can select it and carry out the desired task.
Now, can you adjust the pitch? I mean, the speed of the speech?
Yes, this is cruising. This was right, Kelly was using this before I left town here, and she likes to listen to things fast. So, now, if I want to listen to music or books, I mean, this supports Audible. I mean, like I said, I used to listen to Audible books on this device before. I abandoned it for my E61. But the one thing I really appreciate about Windows Mobile 6 is it comes with this program called Voice Command for free. Windows Mobile 5 users have to still purchase it for $40. But for what it's done, I'm telling you, it's the best $40 I'll ever spend. I just press a button and I say, if I know that I want to call Kelly on her mobile phone, I'll say, call Kelly Dunn Mobile. No. Call Russell Richardson, home.
Call Russell Richardson, home.
Yes. And I'll hang up before he... I'll hang up before
it happens. It did move fast.
Yeah. Wow. It does it that fast. That is what I miss on the Symbian phone. You don't have nearly good voice recognition on the Symbian phone as you do on the mobile phone.
Which smartphone you have in your hand?
I have... This is actually a pocket PC phone called the HP iPack 69... HW6915.
Okay.
It's the European version of this phone, and the U.S. version is called the 6945.
And that's HP again?
Hewlett Packard, yep. iPack 6945. It's a wonderful phone with a QWERTY keyboard, and I promise I will pass it around here in a minute. I'm big on listening to music. So if I want to plug in a nice set of speakers, you know, as I'm doing my thing around the house or whatever, listen to music, I can say, shuffle on. Now it's just going to play everything because I'm going to tell it to play everything.
Everything.
And I could be walking around with wireless Bluetooth, you know, hi-fi headphones. And I hear a Carrie Underwood song being played. Or I could play a specific artist. I could press that button and I could say, play Ray Charles. And that fast, it's already starting to play my Ray Charles music. Hit the road, Jack.
But you have to input that.
Yeah, you just copy the files over from between your computer. They're just MP3 files. Any Windows mobile device that's supported by MobileSpeak or MobileSpeak Pocket, this happens to be a 6915, but it could be any number of devices out there. Like, I think the last I counted, there were like 85 different Windows mobile devices that you could use.
All from different carriers,
all from different companies. You've got HTC, you've got HP, you've got Motorola. Yeah, I mean, this works. This feature works just as well on a Windows Mobile smartphone as it does on Pocket PC phone.
Can this be used with the Nextel service?
Ooh. Unfortunately, no. Sprint, yes. Nextel is very well aware of this type of technology. I think the two-way radios feature is what a lot of people keep it for, because it's a pretty cool feature. But they don't have a Windows Mobile device yet that supports, you know.
I think they will soon, because they've got the hybrid phones now. They have hybrid phones that use the PCS network, the old Sprint PCS network, and you're able to integrate that with the Nextel two-way radio. You just buy a hybrid phone, and I'm sure that if there isn't one out there already, there probably will be one coming probably by the end of the year. They like to release new phones, you know, for the holidays.
For somebody who don't know, GSM, what that means here in the U.S. is that you're either probably using T-Mobile or...
T-Mobile or Singular, or Singular. Main two carriers. And then we have a number of, you know, prepaid carriers. Prepaid, like you have...
Right.
Oto is there, Buzz is there, Uo is there.
And then the CDMA network would most likely be Sprint and Verizon. That one, how much is the question is, how much does that phone cost? You could find that phone about $500.
$69.50.
That $69.45 is the U.S. version. And what the U.S. version means is it has an American electrical connection, a U.S. connection versus a European one. And also it uses Pocket Streets, which is a GPS navigation program, which is totally inaccessible, versus TomTom. The European software version called TomTom, which is, again, totally accessible to us. And I think that gives me a good segue into my next topic, which is GPS technology, unless somebody has any other questions. The question is, does it come with a USB cable so you can connect it to a computer? And, of course, yes, it does, actually. It comes with a cradle. You can either get a USB cable that plugs into the bottom, or you can have it on a cradle where you put it down in the evening and it synchronizes all your data and charges the battery all at the same time.
And this is a Bluetooth, so we can also interact with the laptop as a Bluetooth?
Correct.
Earl, I've heard that the Pocket PC phones might be a little more snappier and more responsive than the smartphones. Is that true or not really?
And that has to do with processor speed. The Pocket PC phones tend to have faster processors, but they also tend to have bigger batteries. So it is to a degree. The 6945 has a 416 megahertz processor. That's a pretty darn fast processor for a phone. The MDA has what, 195 megahertz?
Yeah.
Or is it 200 megahertz? Something
195, you're right.
195?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
you're always trying to strike a balance between speed and battery life, and that's why you have to charge these things every day. So where you're going to get snappier responsiveness from a Pocket PC device with a 416 or 500 megahertz processor, you're going to get longer battery life out of a smartphone because it doesn't use a fast processor. And you have to ask yourself, well, what's important to me? If I want to play music on a smartphone, if I want to play Audible books or manage my contacts and calendar appointments, I don't need a fast processor because the difference in functionality from a user perspective is going to be negligible.
Will something like a Motorola Q play books and so on?
Yeah, you can actually get Audible for the Motorola Q.
What about Windows Media?
Oh, yeah. You can play Windows Media files on both the Pocket PC and on the smartphone.
What is the memory size of this phone? 6.45?
6.45, I'm trying to think. 64 meg, I think. And then I've got a 2 gig SD card.
You can add the micro SD card?
SD Mini in that one.
SD Mini.
Yeah.
And up to 2 gig we can...
Yeah.
Do you use the QWERTY keyboard or do you exclusively mostly use speech?
The answer is I love the ability when somebody walks up to me and says, "Hey, you know, Earl, I got some information for you. And I want to take down their contact information, or if I want to quickly jot down a calendar appointment." It is just a snap to use that little integrated keyboard. Once you're used to it, you're used to it. It's a thumb keyboard. You're not gonna do a lot of note taking on it, but for short bits of information, I use the QWERTY keyboard all the time.
The mobile speak, is that fully accessible with the third generation phones? Because I use Tox, and at one point I was gonna get a third generation phone, and I know Tox isn't fully accessible with them, so I was wondering if mobile speak is.
Well, Tox actually has had some recent releases that do support a lot of third generation phones.
Yeah, they support a lot of it, but it's not fully functional.
Fully functional in what sense?
Not all the parts of the phone are accessible.
That was the case even in the best days of the second generation of phones. Most of the things are accessible with Tox now, and most of the things are accessible with mobile speak on the third generation phones. I'm going to demo a third generation phone right now, as it can be used with another program called Wayfinder Access, which is a GPS navigation software program. If by fully operational, you mean can I do calendar appointments and contacts and email?
Well, I mean, like, can you do? I have the 6682 with Tox, and I can pretty much do anything on it.
I think they have, like I said before, they have some catching up to do on the Symbian 9. Phones on the third generation phones, but they're getting pretty close to where they were with Symbian 8.
You said before, and it's a good comment because I'm one of these who fell into that category. of people who will buy a Windows mobile phone. We'll take a look at MobileSpeak Pocket. We'll know it's a challenge. We'll use it. May come back to it. What percentage do you think of your customers sort of look at that and say, this is great, it does a lot of stuff, but maybe it's more power than I need?
I would say the vast percentage, just based on sales alone, I would say that we sell probably 90% more MobileSpeak smartphone than we sell Pocket. The people who tend to like the Pocket PC phones are like network administrators and geeks and things like that, you know. Because the smartphone does what most people want it to do.
But not Word.
Can
you not produce a word processing document with an add-on third-party package?
Yes, you can.
Yeah, you hadn't said that.
The software program is actually called Vika, V-I-E-K-A. WordPad. It's free. You download it, install it, and it turns your phone into a heck of a note taker. Because it's got a lot of the same features, the file management features that you have with WordPad, for example. Basically, WordPad for the Windows smartphone.
And does MobileSpeak support it?
Yep, fully.
What's the name of
that? Vika WordPad, V-I-E-K-A, and it can be found at V-I-E-K-A.com. www.vika.com.
Can you describe what apps are available to people moving from smartphone to Pocket and then also moving, say, from device to device once you get a license?
Yeah, that's a good question. The question is, can I explain what paths there are for people moving from, say, smartphone, like a MobileSpeak to like a Pocket PC phone, right?
Right.
And what was the other part of that?
If somebody
changes devices, we'll start with the second half of the question first. There is an upgrade path for all of these software programs, whether you're talking Symbian, SmartPhone, or Pocket, and they're all about $100. So I should say device transfer, a transfer fee. They're all about $100 if you want to go from one device to another. All you really need to do is produce your original registration information and your new registration information, and we can generate a license code for $100. If you're going from Symbian, and they called for a while, Code Factory, the manufacturers of MobileSpeak, was calling this an upgrade. Now they refer to it as a cross. If you're going from Symbian to smartphone, it's $149, and just recently they just made the same true if you want to go from smartphone, because believe it or not, a lot of people are finding out about the functionality of programs like Wayfinder Access, and they're moving back from smartphone back over to the Symbian side of things. To the Symbian phones.
So would it be the roughly $150 plus the $100 device switch, or would that?
If you own Pocket, or if you own smartphone, let's take smartphone for an example. If you own MobileSpeak smartphone and you want to go to another Windows mobile smartphone device, it's $100. If you own Windows smartphone and you want to go to a Symbian device, it's not a transfer because it's not going from one platform to the same platform. It's going to a different platform. That's $150. Finally, what I'm going to do is a little demonstration on Wayfinder Access, and we've got our little friend, the GPS receiver, up there in the window. We just released a newsletter that announced some specials here. First of all, on the Braille display side of things, I think I did mention earlier that we do have a product service agreement now in place for all of our Braille displays. So an additional year beyond the 2-year manufacturer's warranty, you can now purchase. I think probably the most responded to special that we just announced was one where we've got a limited quantity of these. This is the brand new 6682 phones with MobileSpeak installed, Wayfinder Access, and a GPS receiver for $1,199. $1,199 for a GPS receiver, Wayfinder Access, MobileSpeak screen reader, and the phone. If you think of what some of the other GPS navigation software programs cost by themselves, you probably figure that this is a pretty good deal in itself. Wayfinder Access costs $549 by itself. The GPS receiver is going to run you anywhere, depending on which one you get, between $100 and $150. And then the screen reading software, because you've got the 6682, we've got the special going on right now where you get it for $150. So you can get your phones talking for $150.
Can I run a Holix receiver off a 6682 with the Wayfinder?
I believe you can.
That's the Bluetooth receiver?
Yeah. In fact, I have a customer now who likes it because it has the same size battery as the 6682.
Yeah, it's very smooth. The Holix is, it's the one that they sell with the ones that they sell with Sendero.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very small. Because I've got an 82, and I was thinking, yeah, I've got a couple of pieces already in place. Is there a difference between the older 6682s and the newer ones?
No. Why don't I go ahead and wake up my phone here? I do apologize that this is kind of quiet, but actually for a phone, this has got a really, really good speaker. I'm using the Phonics Dectalks synthesizer. And I have it set for Huge Harry because I don't like the perfect Paul voice on it. I'm just simply navigating the menu system, and I'm going to go to a place called Installations. This is actually easier to use on the 6682, Barry, because it places it right within the main menu.
That's nice.
Instead of like burying it one level deep, actually. This isn't too much of a hardship. It's called Access, so I'm going to press Enter to get on that. Into that, and it's going to, it's processing, it's connecting to the internet. That's something else that you all need to understand. Also, I can step off of an airplane anywhere in the continental United States and have access to destinations immediately, GPS access, never having to ever load a map. That's really nice. And what makes this happen is because I have a data service on my cell phone, unlimited data service, so When I turn on my GPS receiver and it triangulates my position, it knows where I am and it basically grabs the information off the Wayfinder servers. So I never have to load maps on my device, which is a really, really nice thing. Because when I'm using Trekker, I get off the plane, it's like, I didn't put the maps on for Massachusetts, Now you can get an 8-gig card and probably put the entire U.S. on it, which is really nice. But the point being is that as maps are being updated on the Wayfinder server, you don't have to worry about it. It's just being done without your knowledge. You don't have to download or pay for an upgrade or anything like that. So I'm in Wayfinder. This is a multi-page dialogue, and if you're familiar with the way these Symbian phones work, you go between pages by left and right arrowing, and you go within the page or within the menu system just by up and down arrowing. So the first, call it a page that I'm on, is called Maps, and my choices are, I can find, favorites, services, some states you've got services like you can check transportation, mass transit, like train schedules based on where you are. It doesn't work in Minnesota. I was very sad. But you can get the weather forecast and things like that. I'm going to go to find. And it says address or company. Now, Leon, the gentleman who gave me a ride here, is one of our business partners, owns a company called ABIC, if you remember the ZoomX and ZoomTrix. I'll give him a plug because I think it's a fantastic product. When he was giving us a ride through the McDonald's drive-thru, he didn't really know how to get here. He had a rough idea. And all I had to do is go here to the spine dialogue, and type in the word National NAT. I'm using the QWERTY keyboard on the device, just like the one on the 6945, 6915. National Braille. That's probably enough, but I'll just put add press. My GPS receiver is about 20 feet away from me. And it's a searching National Braille Press. It tells me I'm at 150 feet away from it. but it's probably telling me that because I don't know, how far am I away from the front
door? Because you're in the back of the building.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
The GPS has an accuracy of about 50 feet anyway.
50 feet.
But I'm impressed because it told us, it does turn by turn. I have two people who drive for me in Minnesota, a guy named Russell who drives part-time, and when I get in the car, he doesn't even use MapQuest anymore. It's like, do you have your GPS? And so he plots the route, and he's forever talking to the woman because he says, turn right here. He goes, oh, shut up. I'm not going to turn right here. I know where I'm going. So it becomes very contentious between him and the GPS receiver, but it gets us there. I was, 95% of the time.
I mean, on the Trekker, you've got, you know, your automobile mode, which is a typical thing. Mm-hmm. You've got pedestrian mode, which is really sort of for blind people walking around. What is this?
You've got free mode on the Trekker. This is set. Actually, this is set for taxi mode right now. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to go down into the settings. Back out one more level here. And I'm going to go down to my settings dialog. Map. Okay. Here we go. Settings. I know that I have to go one to the right to select my transport mode. Except for taxi. The other two choices are passenger car and pedestrian. I'm going to set up a pedestrian now. Somebody asked me. Yeah, I knew you were going to ask that.
Yeah, between passenger car and...
Taxi one goes fast.
Right.
You know, it's funny you should ask that because I haven't noted a real difference except one time I was testing it out and we turned the wrong way on purpose and it's going to recalculate when you do that automatically. And in passenger car mode it says... turn right, you know, 200 feet, turn right, 200 feet, turn right. Hmm. So it takes you around the block. In the taxi mode, it said, you turn here. If you want to make a cab driver mad, just use your GPS. You could be very discreet with it because if you have a braille display, you can just be looking at it and they don't even know. Or you can pair up your headset, your Bluetooth headset with it and just listen to it like that. I do that all the time. So, okay, so I've set it to pedestrian mode now. Let's actually go to the right here. I'm going to see... It takes a while for it to get, the GPS receiver to really get a handle on the area that you're in right now. Let's see how it's done. I'm gonna arrow to the right here. I've got info is loading. Altitude, I don't have anything for. It says 0 feet. 114 degrees. So based on your, you know, north is zero, right? 90 degrees is going to be to your right. It's going 1 mile per hour sitting up on the window ledge there.
Yeah, that's it.
GPS 66%, and that's probably why, because it's not great, but that's not horrible. The best being 100%, of course. Okay, so I'm going to right arrow here to the left, to the right here. I've got a vicinity all view, which is going to tell me as I'm walking. I can arrow through here and see all the street crossings and all the businesses. If I right arrow to and one more time. Okay, so it's telling me vicinity crossings. So now I want to cut all the businesses and things like that out of the loop, and I just want street crossings.
Favorites,
and I define those. And we got points of interest. Let's see what we got for points of interest. Boston Sharma? Is that what it said?
What it says.
Let's see here. There's a northeastern train station.
That's right. North.
What else we got?
I know one big thing.
Oh, Connor Lorcan's Grill. Is that how you say that?
Never heard of it.
So really? You want to go there? Sounds good. Yeah. Let's see here. I'm gonna keep going here. I didn't catch that, but something Greater Boston. Another same thing here. Connor Lorcan's Grill.
Some Royal Cafe.
Okay, so if I wanted to go to any of these places, all I would have to do at this point is press button one. Say navigate, and it calculates a route. It's calculated. Okay, so it says walk 220 feet, then make U-turn. What?
What?
I don't get it.
You're in a cab.
We are inside, after all. But we can actually look in an itinerary now and say, what the heck are you talking about? So in 475 feet, you're supposed to make a U-turn? Okay, yeah, if we were outside, we'd be getting much better results. The question is, what will the Trekker do that this won't do? I think the biggest thing the Trekker will do that this doesn't do right now is let you define your own unique points of interest, your own waypoints. See, because I can plug in an address, and as long as it exists in the map information, I can get there, and I can you know, I can put in my favorites or whatever. But Trekker allows you to walk up to, you know, your favorite park bench and mark that. This doesn't allow you to do that yet.
It seems that there must be other differences considering that you have to load the maps of the Trekker.
That's the biggest difference, and boy, I tell you, it really pretty much does the same stuff. This one tells you that when the street crossings are coming up, that one tells you. Another thing that you can do with Trekker that you can't do with this is that because you've got the map information on your PDA, you can actually go to a specific address and then take a virtual walk around that address. With this, you have to actually plot a route, and then you can take your virtual walk that way, you know, using the itinerary view. But you can't say, oh, I wonder what's over here, and then arrow to the right and get an idea of what businesses are off that way and that kind of thing. So that, in that sense, Trekker is very powerful.
Is it the map databases that this accesses?
I don't know.
Well, it also depends on what you and how you pay for it. This, I imagine, early, you must have to pay a fee for this service every month.
You pay the fee for your data service every month.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Whereas the maps, you buy them, and that's it.
It's
a bigger cost up front.
Exactly.
And you don't pay it down the line. The disadvantage of the maps, of course, is that they don't update probably the same way this does.
Yeah.
Well, but this, you pay, I don't know what you have to pay per month for the unlimited data service, but I'll bet it's not $10.
Well, you pay $559 or $49 for the software.
Uh-huh.
And then down the line, if I want to take my software and put it on another device, I just plug in the code that I got when I purchased it. It deactivates this device and it activates the other device. So it is truly a lifetime subscription.
But there's, there's no monthly fee?
No, there isn't.
Not for Wayfinder.
Oh. No, but for the data service there is.
Yeah, it's $29.
Yeah.
For T-Mobile, it's $29. And I had a customer was just irate with me a couple weeks ago because she said that, oh, they want $40, and you didn't tell me that we had to pay for data service and stuff, so I make it a point to put that in all my press releases and things now. And then she called me back the same day and says, okay, I'm buying it because they said I could have it for $20. It's worth $20 a month for me, she says.
The data service is $29, so
mm-hmm. For T-Mobile, I pay $29 a month for my data
service.
For unlimited data.
I got one for 20. I got a single unlimited for 20.
Yep. They'll give it to you for 20.
Unlimited.
Is it for travel data?
This is just for
just cell
phone. Any data.
Internet connectivity.
Email,
internet.
Everything.
You call Singular or Team, or I guess they call themselves
AT&T
now.
AT&T.
You call them up, you haggle, they'll give it to you for $20. And if that representative doesn't, hang up and call another one.
Right.
Now, who is this Wayfinding product, a Code Factory product?
Code Factory is an international distributor for Wayfinder based in Stockholm, Sweden. Wayfinder has been around for a long time. In fact, I used to use it on my 6600. It was called Wayfinder Navigator. It's just in the last year that they worked with the
RNIB.
They worked with them towards making a blindness-specific product, and this is what they came up with. This is the first version of what they came up with, and I really expect that it's going to get better.
But that runs only on
Symbian.
And only on
mobile speak for now. Talks is coming with a version, but they don't have it yet.
People are using Talks now.
Are they? Yeah, but there's supposed to be a version that's made for it, I guess.
Yeah, I think that they've run in a beta. No, actually 3.21 works with Wayfinder.
Ah, okay.
It does?
So this won't work on, if you've got Verizon as your phone service, you can't use...
Correct.
No.
Do you see this coming for some of the smartphones or the...
Yes, I do. Here's the situation. Sweden, a European company, and 90% of the people in Europe are still on the GSM network, and they're using Symbian. In Europe, Symbian rules. And I've been in meetings with these guys over their Wayfinder off and on for the last 2 years, banging and pleading them practically to do a Windows Mobile. And last I heard, they were doing it, so they just weren't willing to tell me when they plan to release. But the first one who does it wins. Everybody wants it for Windows Mobile. The 6915 that I'm passing around here, that has a GPS receiver built into it. Judging from some forums, I guess a really, really accurate one. But, boy, there goes your battery again, because now you're using all your processor to access the satellites and stuff, and you'd be lucky if you get 3 hours to charge.
Yeah, from what you've seen, are there 3 or 4 phones that you like?
Yeah, I like my E61 a lot, because I can use the QWERTY keyboard. I actually high-marked the F and the J, so it looked like my iPac 6945. I really like the 6682. I'm not a believer that latest is greatest. Yeah, it's an older phone, so what? But it's easy to use. You can feel the buttons. It rocks with Wayfinder access, and it's really well supported by the screen reader manufacturers. On the smartphone side of things, personally, I don't like the way the Motorola Q sounds, but it's the only game in town for people who have Verizon. Actually, I take that back. There's another one called the Pantech 820. A lot of the stores don't even stock. And one of the guys at one of the stores told me that he doesn't stock it because there's so many problems with it. So it's like, oh, well, I won't recommend that phone. It has an antenna, I guess, that you can... It's a flip phone, which, to me, that's in its favor because I like flip phones. I guess if you take the antenna off, there's no difference in reception if you have it on.
Possibly, if I vaguely remember right, maybe the battery wasn't as good as the Q.
Yeah, the battery on the Q, you got to be ready to charge it every day, carry an extra battery, or get the extended battery, which fattens the device up considerably. But it's a good phone because, man, I tell you, I think that out of all the phones, that is probably, I personally don't like it, but that's just because I'm me and I'm not on Verizon and I'm not on Sprint. But the people who have it tend to like it just fine because they can do a lot of the cool stuff that they want to do with it. And the reasons might be, well, my family's on Verizon. Well, my company has a Sprint account.
I don't happen to have Verizon, but I can tell you the town that I live in, Verizon is much better supported than any of the other carriers. My family has AT&T, formerly Singular. I have T-Mobile. And there are places that we can't use our phones where my friend was Verizon.
If I were asked what is my favorite phone from Verizon, I would say right now the Pocket PC phone, the Palm Trio 700WX, just rocks. That phone is very fast. It works flawlessly with the Braille displays. It's easy to use. The keys, you can really feel the keys on the thing pretty well.
Is it a flip?
No. It's a big PDA phone.
Have you talked about the differences between mobile speak, Code Factory products, and the Nuance?
Yeah, Nuance Talks? No, I haven't, actually. We sell both. I'm a sub-dealer under VisionQ for Talks because I was given the opportunity to become a direct dealer with Nuance, but at the time it was too rich for my blood to get into it, so I decided to just stay as a reseller for VisionQ out of Portland. They're competitors on the Braille displays, but we all get along just fine. I think that the biggest difference that I've noticed is that when somebody says, I hate DuckTalk, you know, like so many people do, or some people call me up and say, I hate Eloquent. You know, it's also subjective. It's like, well, then you better not buy Talks, because that's what they use, is Eloquent. I like them both just fine. They both give me access to the phone, and I can understand them. I have no preference for one TTS, text-to-speech engine, over another. So it doesn't make a difference for me, but for some people are very passionate about what synthesizer they use. So MobileSpeak uses the Phonics DeckTalk, and they've also got TTS engines with what's called concatenative speech technology, which is based on real human speech. But DeckTalk is synthetic speech, and it has a very small footprint, and it uses very few resources versus some of these concatenative speech engines like Acapella or Loquendo. They're very human sounding, they're very good, but they suck your battery power away, they drain your resources, and to me, I just assume use a more efficient text-to-speech engine.
Don't they also respond slower in sense that takes some more time?
They really use the resources. Talks has a tendency to charge for their upgrades. If you bought the AT&T or the Singular Special, you know, you got the $200 rebate with the version 1.4 of Talks, but then you get charged, you know, it's $100, I guess, to upgrade to the latest version of Talks. MobileSpeak just lets you have it.
If you didn't get your phone with the Singular Special, you can go download upgrades from the Nuance website.
No. Been there, done that, tried to get charged for it.
Oh.
I think you can with inversion. So, for example,
if you're 1.7 to 1.9 or 2.0, but
if you're going from version 2 of Talks to version 3,
I see.
You will pay.
Yes, okay. Mobile Speak, there's no charge. I know this.
Yeah. Are all businesses really listed or just the ones that pay the GPS company to get listed?
There are these map companies that collect the map data, basically go around and, you know, survey different neighborhoods and photograph different businesses and different addresses and things like that. A friend of mine had a teenage son who, that was his job one summer, was to drive down different streets and collect data for map companies and just drive around and, you know, take pictures and add those pictures to the satellite pictures. And so there's a lot of businesses listed in there, and I guarantee you those businesses are not paying the map companies because they got a lot of this. I mean, you talk about Hank's Little Tire Store or something like that. I mean, Earl and I were walking around Watertown. We found some just really odd businesses that I never knew were even existed, you know. So it's pretty much all businesses are listed. I mean, they include everything they can. Sometimes I think they don't take businesses out that should be taken out.
That's the real challenge is keeping the stuff updated. A lot of times you'll see, I used to have a device with GPS, and what I would see is, there were things that used to be there maybe 10 years ago that aren't there anymore.
Exactly.
Right. And they would still have them listed. Yeah. And that's great if you know what
you're going to get a haircut. You know that area.
When you're in a new place, because I find this most useful when I'm traveling somewhere where I don't know where I'm going. And that's when you get surprised. You think, okay, I'm going to go to X restaurant. Then, well, maybe not.
That's what you call it.
Yeah. I have a whole mall that got demolished by my house. And it says that every one of those businesses are still there, even though it's a big hole in the ground right now. They have a tendency to add to the new businesses, but they don't take out the old ones. So you got to be careful with that. It's not perfect technology. You really do have to...
They don't have any way of knowing when the old ones go away because, you know, the last thing the old businesses do is notify the data companies.
Exactly. Yeah. GPS is by no means a way for you to start slacking on your mobility skills.
There's also a different issue, for example. I'm sure that it's not something they want to publicize, but take Sendero, for example. And they've just come up with their new release, and it's a great release. But here's the thing, folks. They have to specially reorder the maps when they're already produced commercially. In other words, to get them to fit within the memory confines of the machines, they have to encrypt and compact the data and remove some of the fields. What that does is it may add another 6 to 9 months to the outdatedness of the maps and before the maps are going to get upgraded again. So that's why you always find, and I'm sure Mike May wouldn't like to say this, that's why you probably find Sendero 6 to 9 months behind on its maps, because it's built in by the necessity that they actually have to re-edit them once the commercial maps are out.
What about, Earl, the phones with the Braille displays? Are there certain phones that do better with the Braille display connectivity than others?
The version of MobileSpeak that I'm using right now is just released about 3 weeks ago. And when they sent me a test version about 3 months...
The MobileSpeak for the Symbian you're talking
about? Yeah, for the Symbian. Okay. 3 months ago, I buried my face in my hands and I laid my head on my desk. And it was just a mess. But then I started, you know, and a bunch of us started reporting, okay, here are the issues. And then I tell you, they came up with a very solid connection between the Handytech Braille displays and the Symbian phones that really, I think, have the Windows Mobile platform beat for connectivity and stability. So the Symbian phones are working great. They are not powerhouse machines either. The Symbian phones do not have real fast processors. When you get into the Windows environment, though,
MobileSpeak Pocket
and smartphone, those are situations where more processor speed is better for driving Braille. I can use a Braille display off and on for a couple of days on the Symbian platform. If I use the Braille display with MobileSpeak Pocket, I'll probably get through the day, you know, if I'm using it off and on. But I'm the kind of guy who throws it on the charger at the end of the day anyways, every day.
You want to go to a store, say a Verizon store, you want to get a phone. What do you tell Joe Salesman, who probably hasn't a clue what Talks is or any of that stuff?
If you have your mind made up, if you want to use Talks or MobileSpeak or Pocket, you go to that compatibility list, and it's up to you. The onus is on you to find out what phones are compatible with that software, and then go to the phone company to take a look at them. Verizon has a great 30-day trial period that you can use.
They all do now. Singular does, T-Mobile does. You know,
run the trial.
That's what I did. I literally went to the websites,
and looked at the phones that were compatible, and then I went in and I said, okay, because I know, like, for example, it used to be a Series 60 phone that used to be
right.
the old.
Right.
Okay. So you just say, I want to know what you have in Series, and they understand some of that, yeah. usually. They don't know what you're talking about in terms of your software, most of them. But they do, if you say, I want to, you know, I want this phone, or I want a Series 60 phone, they can help you there.
I mean, what I did was went to the Code Factory site and then found out what phones were. Then I looked at the phones on the Verizon site, and then I went to the store having read all that.
Yeah. One thing I did that I think was really helpful, I had a guy, when I bought my phone, he didn't know about the software and stuff, but he was kind of intrigued. And he asked me a lot of questions. I eventually, when I got my software all installed, I went back and showed him. So that the next
right.
time some blind person walked in, he would know even more than he did when I walked in. And he called me about 2 weeks ago and said, I just want to tell you, some other blind person came in, and I'm so glad you told me things because I knew what to tell them.
One difficulty I found, though, is when you go into a store and you ask for a Series 60 phone, a lot of the, you know, salespeople think that a Series 60 phone is a phone that has a 60 of some kind in the model number.
Right. Recently, some of you probably saw the press release from Code Factory partnering with AT&T on the release of, they're offering the Symbian phones, the smartphone, and the Pocket PC phone, as I understand it. Code Factory doesn't seem to think that this presents much of a problem from a user support perspective. And I debated with their CEO on this, not that I want to make this anybody else's problem, but my dilemma is that I've got 30-day demos out there that have been pending, and now these people are going to go to Singular and buy their software from them and come back to us for support. If I'm given an opportunity to pay $100 less for a program, chances are pretty good that I'm going to do it. But when I need support down the road, what would you do if you were me?
I charge a support contract fee.
Yep.
I would say, okay, you know what? I'd set up some kind of a fee structure that says, if you bought your phone from somebody else other than me, and you want my support, and you do give the best support in the business, and no Earl did not pay me to say that, I would say, you know what? For a certain number of calls per year, you're going to pay X amount.
How about a $199 contract for 2 years? That's what I do.
Something like that.
Well,
you know, in this business, you get sucked dry for tech support.
You can charge an annual fee, you can charge a lifetime fee, or you can
charge by the call fee.
The only problem with the call fee is that people will bitch because of the credit card stuff and everything else. It may be better just to do it, but to simply say, look, you chose to get your phone elsewhere, and that's fine. We're like a support plan. If you can do it, you can do it through AT&T, and good luck to you. Or, you know, pay.
Or you're on your own.
Yeah,
your support is worth something, and you should make it clear to people that that's part of what they're getting if they buy their software from you, is the support.
From my experience, when you purchase, like, software with a phone through Singular, you're not necessarily getting the latest version. So if you're selling things with the latest version, that could also be an incentive.
So the idea is, if you're my customer, you get tech support free, no problem.
Position it as a support contract that everybody gets, but if they go for elsewhere, they have to pay you, and you get that contract for free. They buy
that's
it.
That's right.
Yeah.
So
right.
then it's not a messy thing to talk
that's
about.
Exactly. That's a very good, very good way to frame it. If you want to take my email address down, info@handytech.us, and just request a catalog, and we'll just send you a zip version. It just we're also happy to mail you a CD version. You just pop it in, and it just opens up the web page which contains our catalog. If you go to www.handytech.us, and you go to Adaptive Products and Services, and you were to do a JAWS find or a find with Window Eyes for catalog, it'll bring you right to the latest version of the catalog. You go in there, and you can just browse the catalog online.
So
lot of people in the room are probably coming from either cell phones with no accessibility or possibly, the, for instance, the LG phones with Verizon. The technologies you've described kind of open up text messaging. And I, for instance, got the Motorola Q at the end of May, and I don't know how I lived before without text messaging, not only just for talking to people, but there are a number of information services.
I totally agree with you. Before I got into text messaging, I thought, what a waste of time. But I've discovered that this is a fantastic way of communicating and conveying what you want people to know without bothering them. When I don't want to bother somebody, I say, hey, give me a call when you have a minute. And they'll either call me right now or they'll call me when they have a minute. You know,
when you text message, what do you use? Because I have a T-Mobile NDA. Mm-hmm. And I can use that little keyboard, but it's a pain in the neck. I can do it. Mm-hmm. It's never going to be my best friend.
I use the E61, no problem. It's got the integrated keyboard on it, very tactilely friendly. I actually went as far as having a high mark put on the F and the J.
Is that different than the NDA keyboard?
And that's what I use. Or if I'm, you know, using the 6682, which I do sometimes because I really like it. I just do the T9 version. You press what my sister does. She's got the 6682, and she loves it because she just opens up her Sierra Bluetooth keyboard. It's a Think Outside keyboard, and she opens it up, and that's how she does her text messages. Quite voluminous text messaging.
Nick, how long does it take you to send a text message?
As you're typing a word, it will predict what you're saying, and it can learn words that you use.
If it predicts a word that you don't want, can you just keep typing?
You just keep typing.
Okay, so it's like I have to tell it no.
T-Mobile does this thing now where, for example, if you call and you add information, you ask for a number, it says push whatever to have this number sent to you as a text message.
And Tell Me will do that.
Yes, Singular does that as well.
And Google 411, you can say text me the info, and it will send you the name and address and phone number.
Which is nice, because you don't have to write it down.
What do you, would you have to put into the queue in order to do text messaging?
We'll see. Okay. Smartphone.
Yeah.